Welcome to episode 159 of the Fertility Podcast. And I just want to take a moment to just cover a couple of things that have been going on. It was National Fertility Awareness Week last week in the UK. Loads of brilliant stuff, conversations, content, new hashtags on Instagram. And if you are just finding this TTC community, whether it's through my podcast or you found my podcast through Instagram, do take a bit of time to look at the show notes for this episode. I'm going to put some of the hashtags that are being used on Instagram. I've had a few people ask me like what's best to use to find other people, so check out the show notes for that. Also, there was a bit of a ridiculous headline that was shared in the UK that's caused expected outrage. Some bloke had published some ridiculous kind of stats to say that the figures of adoption in the UK had declined, and he was relating it to the success of IVF, which to me seems such a ridiculous thing to suggest. First of all, to make the suggestion that it's only people dealing with infertility that should go down the adoption route in itself is outrageous, incorrect, unfair. As it happens when you're struggling to have a child and people say just adopt, that is not only unfair, but it's ill thought out. Why should those struggling to conceive naturally be given that responsibility to adopt a child? Surely it's everybody's responsibility if they are wanting to help children who are placed in care, need to find families to live their lives in. Then whatever your circumstances are, if you are able and wanting to adopt, then that should happen. The other thing that I want to raise, having spent time at the weekend talking to a friend who has adopted, about the issues that you have to overcome to be able to adopt. I've got friends trying to adopt, having all sorts of questions raised about circumstance, whether they are appropriate and able to look after a child, and they would be amazing. They've already got a wonderful little boy, and it would just complete their family, and they would be amazing, yet they're having to prove all sorts of things, and it's become a very lengthy process for them, and emotionally draining and stressful. So this whole article about adoption being down to the infertile, which is pretty much what it was saying, gets a big thumbs down from me. And on my Insta, I was sharing a brilliant article written by my previous week's guest, Katie Linderman of the Uber Barons Club. So do check out my Insta at Fertility Poddy for that. Something else I just wanted to tell you about was a chat that I got to take part in for the BBC World Service talking about global infertility issues, and I'll put details of that on the show notes this episode as well, because I was pretty proud of that. One of the other things that I'd love you to do is rate this podcast in Apple Podcasts. You can review it if you like, but even if you just click the stars, you can give 5, that would be amazing, you don't have to, but if you do give 5 stars, then what it means is other people having a look for fertility related podcasts to listen to, if they look at those stars, they'll go, okay, cool, yeah, lots of people think that that's a good podcast to listen to. I'll listen to it as well. So especially if you've been listening to this podcast for a while and haven't done that yet, it would be a massive help for me. I don't really like asking, but loads of other people do on podcasts. If you listen to podcasts, you'll have heard it, so hopefully you won't mind. I'm now going to welcome Dr. Larissa Corder, who is a fertility specialist, passionate about natural care when it comes to fertility treatment and the more holistic approach. And we're going to be talking over the coming months. Larissa has a whole new project that she's going to talk about. I was really keen, having seen Larissa, and you may well also have seen her on the telly if you're in the UK, to talk more about her approach to the fertility treatments that she provides and her whole take on where fertility treatment is going. Larissa, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me, Natalie. I'm really excited to do this and to finally make technology happen, right? And do this together.
Well, I must, a disclaimer here. This is our third attempt at communicating.
It is.
If I could have just come round and done it in person, I would have. But the miles are too lengthy between us. So
You've been amazing. I'm so technologically inept that your guidance has been absolutely amazing. So we've made it work. That's the most important thing. And we've connected. So thanks.
Yay.
Thanks so much for having me on. Aside from my normal, regular, full-time job as a doctor, the other project I've sort of committed myself to is a website that's about to launch. It's been a real labor of love for me, actually, because it really reflects this whole approach that I've been cultivating and trying to bring to life as a doctor, really. And it brings together everything that I've learned, but also things that I use in my life, that I've recommended to my friends, that I've recommended to my patients, that have been shown to have really, really good effects on your health and your well-being. And really, that's the premise of what I do and the treatment that I offer and the sort of culture behind it. It's this whole holistic movement and approach to things. So understanding that, you know, if you want to make your body ready to have a baby and to give birth, you've got to invest in it. And the best way to do that is to try and use the most natural approaches that you can. And that's because foods which are much more natural, or even things such as makeup, and I've got a beauty section coming out on this as well. You know, they're all things that we put inside of ourselves or on top of our skin, which can be absorbed and ultimately can have an impact on our hormones and our well-being and our sperm and our eggs, and also, you know, our ability to be fertile. So it's being mindful of all these really small daily things that we do and practices that we commit to, which can have an astounding effect when they're all compounded together. And when you do this for a long, long time. So they may seem minor, but actually when magnified and done over a longer period of time, they can have some really serious benefits in terms of your health and ability to have a baby.
I'm really fascinated about all of this, and especially about our way in which we go about what we do the day to day. Like, you've just been talking about your makeup and your food, and these are things that we kind of go through the motions with often. And just anecdotally, I was buying a new bed at the weekend, and the guy said to my husband and I, "You spend most of your time either on your feet or lying down in your bed, yet people spend about an hour and a half in their car, but a car is one of the most expensive purchases that people buy that they use on a day-to-day basis." And I thought it was a really, really interesting analogy. And in the same way, I think all too often when you're in this place of trying to have a baby and it maybe isn't happening, and you do start to pay more attention to what's going on, that investment into every bit of your being that you can potentially do is so important. And I know that it can be overwhelming. And I think that it's really interesting that there is such a movement going more towards it. And yes, it can seem like a minefield, but I think we completely overlook it. And I saw on Instagram the other day, Amber, who does my book reviews, who goes by Prega's Kitchen, she had shared a post about making her own deodorant. And I was so impressed, to the point that I've written to her going, "Really? Does it?" It would never occur to me to think about those kind of things. So are you finding, from the feedback that you're having and the conversations that you're having with your peers as well as your patients, that people are really invested in taking the time to do this kind of, to make these changes?
Yeah, oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, I think that there's a whole growing trend and movement towards these more natural therapies. I think it's because men and women are becoming much more conscientious about what they're actually consuming and what's going inside of their bodies and the side effects that that's all having and you know, longer term consequences. So yes, I think the minute that you start to offer a little bit of control back to people and say to them, actually, there really are things that you can do on a practical daily basis that won't cost the earth, that won't take a lot of time, but you can do them from the comfort of your own home or wherever you are, if you're traveling or abroad. Suddenly, I think it makes people feel so much more empowered, because one of the worst things about going through, well, trying to have a baby naturally or going through any fertility treatment is the complete loss of control.
Yeah.
You know, the fact that you are literally just unable to control any small aspect of it. And so I think that a lot of this motivation and a lot of the fact that people are really keen to do something active to help themselves comes and stems from the fact that it's the feeling of empowerment that people relish most of all, the fact that they can actually do something and they can start to hopefully reap the rewards and see the results and become healthier versions of themselves, so primed into being the very best that they can be before, you know, starting or wanting to conceive. And that's the other thing here, that it's not, you know, a question of having drunk for a long time before, or, you know, having smoked or having eaten a lot of bad food and then suddenly saying, okay, I'm going to stop now and I'm going to start trying to have a baby. It's a question of trying to address all of these things even before a baby is on your mind, you know, so just setting you up to be the best possible version of yourself that you can be. So when it comes to trying for a baby, it's not hopefully so difficult, because you've already adopted all of these changes and that this forms a daily habit for you, that it doesn't feel like such a burden to have to do it all of a sudden.
Yeah.
When it comes to wanting to have a baby. And these practices are things that you can also take with you through pregnancy and postnatally and you know, further on in life, because a woman's body is constantly changing, you know, from puberty and then into, you know, conception, pregnancy, postnatally, and then obviously the menopause. So it's about being mindful of that and all those hormonal changes and supporting them in the best possible way through these really small practical acts and changes that you can do.
How much acceptance is this getting from the medical profession as far as it not necessarily being evidence-based? Because I've spoken with practitioners before who maybe have come up against a brick wall because there isn't the evidence, and also patients who have said that there was absolutely no conversation about their lifestyle or changes that should be made, or if there was, it was minimal. Whereas it seems that especially if you're going through treatment or being put through, you know, you're being told you need to walk through those clinic doors, or you've experienced a failed cycle and you're having to go again, surely this would make so much sense to highlight the importance of these kind of lifestyle changes.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think not just in the world of fertility and pregnancy and women's health, but I think just generally at large, no matter what aspect of medicine you're dealing with, it's really, really important to address the lifestyle issues. And I do believe that in the future, that's where medicine will be going. It's going to become more about prevention rather than cures. And, you know, if you think about the impact that obesity has on disease and on diabetes, if you think about the impact that alcoholism, again, has on disease as well, you know, you start to see that actually the majority of disease can be prevented if you try and address all of those issues, and actually that patients can start to help themselves by looking at those issues and can keep themselves healthier for longer rather than just throwing drugs at the problem or medicine at the problem, which of course is, you know, sometimes the easier thing to do in the short run, but not in the long term. And, you know, especially with the demands that we're seeing on the NHS at the moment, I do think it's going to be a lot more about trying to prevent a lot of this. But, you know, traditionally speaking, as doctors trained under the Western system, you know, it's very little emphasis is given towards lifestyle and holistic practice. And it's not really until quite recently that a lot of other people, including doctors, including other healthcare professionals, have really tried and you know, been successful at trying to get across these more holistically minded messages. So that's been because I think there's been a greater demand for it from people, as we've said, you know, this growing movement to do more things that give back control to people and to patients, but also because I think we're becoming more confident in terms of recommending it, and we're seeing the results. When people ask me what inspired me to go into what I do, and of course there were several reasons behind that, but one of the biggest reasons is I was a huge, and still am a huge, follower of Dr. Christian Northrup, who is an American gynecologist. And I read her books when I was about 14, 16. And these books, of course, at the time, were setting out this very new frontier of in women's health, which was all about treating women according to holistic practice, essentially. So according to lifestyle factors. And she'd written things such as being able to see regression of real disease just by addressing a woman's emotional and mental mindset and what she did and practiced every day. And to me, when I read that, I mean, you can imagine this is going back several years. That was just so new age. That was so different.
Yeah.
And at the time, she received a lot of criticism from fellow peers who, of course, had never heard of this stuff, didn't want to believe it, didn't want to accept it, and were looking at her as if, you know, she was an alien to suggest this. It's so funny because it really, really resonated with me even at that young age. And now, of course, you know, there's so many people who are now engaging with this, be it, you know, nutritionists or spiritualists or teachers in meditation, hypnotherapists. There's a whole culture behind this now, which is really, really gaining that momentum and showing us these results. But back then, there really wasn't. And people who first introduced it really had a massive battle on their hands to convince others. But, you know, thankfully, we're seeing that actually this is something that the people are demanding more of now, and with good reason, because these things are incredible and they can really change your life around.
I think the fact that you can have something that maybe you can do yourself, that like we've talked about, that you are in control of, and that you can also do with your other half if you are going through this with someone, that there is that unity there rather than it just being told you've got to do this and this is going to happen, you've got to wait for this, wait for that blood test. So it makes you feel like you're being more proactive, and it's something that Larissa and I are going to be speaking about more. As Larissa said, she has this new website directing you to just learn more about these lifestyle changes, and I think that there's some really interesting conversations that we can have. Now, something else that I wanted to speak with Larissa about was a recent programme that she was involved with on the BBC. And if you're listening outside of the UK, this is still something that's really relevant, and I'm interested to know if it's something that you have any experience of. Larissa was talking about the issues about unregulated sperm donation in the UK, and when you are trying to find a sperm donor and maybe you don't have the money to go through a clinic, there is a growing number of websites where women are finding themselves in quite tricky situations. I was quite shocked to read and to watch what you'd uncovered. How did you feel when you went down this journey?
Oh, gosh. You know, I was so glad that the BBC decided to cover it, because it's been a growing issue of increasing concern. And I could see it in terms of what some of my patients were revealing to me that they'd gone through, and seeing the very real consequences of those emotional scars that had been left on them. So I was waiting for this opportunity to try and talk about it. And it finally came. And I'm so, so glad that the BBC, and actually Channel 4 in a previous documentary, had picked it up. You know, it's something that has been going on for a while. It's this unregulated practice of donating sperm found in online forums, through back doors. It's pretty much something that, you know, the government has really not had any intervention over. And that's what is so worrying, because women who are desperate, who perhaps have no other means of having a child, so they can't afford to come and see a specialist, they can't afford to have treatment, or the NHS won't treat them, because we all know that the current situation is incredibly unfair, whereby NICE guidelines aren't being followed, so a lot of CCGs aren't implementing the rules that they should, and so, you know, couples are not being treated, and same-sex couples may not be entitled to any treatment at all, or single women for that matter. So they are having to resort to these forums, which are completely unregulated, where the donors aren't screened. They, you know, could carry all sorts of health risks, which present safety issues for the women, but also for the babies that are born. And whereby, you know, looking at this longer term, they're potentially being allowed to father more than 10 families, which is the legal limit if this is done via a clinic under the HFEA rules. And, you know, potentially creating loads and loads of half siblings out there that one day could lead to a really big problem.
The other thing that got me was how one of the things that had come up in the report was that donors typically either perform natural insemination.
Yeah.
Rather than artificial, saying that it works better.
Yes. Yeah. So this was the really shocking thing, that actually, if you read through some of the, you can call them advertisements that are up there, you know, they're things such as, well, you know, I'm willing to give this to you, but I prefer to do this using the natural method, by which, of course, they mean having sexual intercourse. And, you know, essentially, that the woman in the situation is putting herself at tremendous risk of assault, all sorts of STDs, not to mention the horror of having to feel pressured into doing something like that in order to have a child. It honestly, it makes my blood boil to actually even
think. It's giving me goosebumps.
That, yeah.
The other thing, and I will put a link to a previous episode that I've done, is the legal implications of any sperm donation that's taken place outside of a private clinic. Then that gent, let's say, for want of a better word, has more rights than maybe a woman would realise over that child.
Exactly right. So when sperm donation is done under heavy regulation, which is how it should be done, then essentially the man that donates doesn't have any legal obligations to that child and can remain anonymous up until the child is 18 years of age, at which stage they are allowed to find out details of who the donor is. But when it takes place in the unregulated context, of course, these rules don't apply. So essentially what, you know, the women who use these donors, the situations that they could end up in is that the person who does the donation could end up wanting to demand access to the child or to demand all sorts of things in terms of being their guardian. And, you know, that becomes an incredibly complex area to sort out legally because, of course, you know, there weren't legal terms to start off with. So it becomes an incredibly slippery slope. And, you know, as I was saying, there are huge ethical implications in terms of potentially creating a lot of half-siblings out there that could start to then influence future relationships for them. And, you know, I think every so often you read an article about how one sibling happened to discover that, you know, they had relations elsewhere and then carried out this search and found out that they actually had a lot of siblings through donations. It's one of those things that we can't really, because there's no way of controlling it. Mm. You just have no idea about the impact that it could have in the future and what that could mean.
Are there any countries that are regulating this and doing a good job of it? Because I was interested in finding out more about what was going on elsewhere. And if you're listening to this, because I appreciate that we're talking about a UK scenario here, if you're listening to this and you have seen forums or it is something that you've thought of or you've been looking into it, do please get in touch because I do want to talk about this more on the podcast. Are there any places that you think they're doing it right?
At the moment, I can only comment from the UK point of view, and I'm not sure, you know, how common this is in other countries. And of course, there will be, depending on the government funding situation, which I think a lot of this hinges on, there may be other countries where this isn't perhaps as pronounced as that because people have generally more access to government funding for IVF or any fertility treatment. But I think that's where our biggest root of the problem is, the fact that a lot of this treatment is not accessible. And that is the unfairest thing about it all, that women are being put in these situations, whereas actually they should be entitled to have this treatment in the first place. And that's what I'm hoping will overturn one day and that will change, because the demand for fertility treatment is only growing. Mm. And actually, these other avenues are also growing, sadly, because of that demand.
A lot to talk about, a lot covered there in that summing up of our quick look at the issue around unregulated sites regarding sperm donation. And Larissa and I will be talking more. We'll be checking in with one another for future episodes of the podcast. And what I'm going to be doing is raising more questions in the closed Facebook group that I have for the podcast, because as you can hear, she's extremely passionate and has a wealth of issues there to be discussed. Well, good luck with the website. And what we'll do is we'll put all the details in the show notes for how people can get to it.
I'd love you to use it. I mean, it's created with you guys in mind. I'd love to get your feedback on what you think, what you want me to include. If you've got any ideas for any content you want to see up there, or you want me and Natalie to discuss them, please, please do get in touch. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been amazing. I even this late at night, I can't believe how energized I am to talk about all these things.
Do you know what? And I actually had a glass of wine before talking to you because our chat moved later and later, and I was thinking, oh, I don't think I've done a podcast chat after a glass of red wine.
It's worked well though. It's worked a treat. I should have probably had that. I just have so much to say on the subject, but it's because there is so much to say, isn't there?
Well, exactly.
And you're just doing your podcast.
There is so much to say, and as always, it's always good to know know whether it's affected you listening directly or whether it's something that you want to know more about, as Larissa said. So thank you for sharing your wisdom, and we will talk again.
Yes. See you soon.
Thank you. Before I give you the show notes for this episode, just a quick note from one of my sponsors who makes this podcast possible. If you're looking for a supplement to take whilst trying to conceive, PregnaCare Conception and Wellman Conception provide advanced nutritional support. They include zinc, vitamin D, and the exact levels of folic acid recommended for women by the UK Department of Health. PregnaCare is expert nutritional care while trying for a baby. And to find out more, visit thefertilitypodcast.com/shop. And also, if you haven't yet had a look at theultimatefertilityguide.com, do. It's a new directory where I'm trying to put lots of different fertility services in one place to help you maybe find the next step possible. So there's clinics, there's charities, there's acupuncturists. If you're thinking of having fertility treatment abroad, then do have a look around. And I'm also doing video interviews with the different members of the guide, which is forming my YouTube channel, so that you get to see their faces, ask them questions, because I always ask in my Facebook group if there's anything you'd like to ask when the different chats are happening. If you haven't joined my Facebook group, it's Talk Fertility. Do that. It's a closed Facebook group. I've got some brilliant former guests as admins to answer your questions as well. So for everything I've just been chatting about, the show notes of this episode are thefertilitypodcast.com/bewell. I'm going to try and start to be a bit more creative with my show note links to help you find them with ease, especially if you're listening whilst walking the dog. Or maybe just chilling, skiving at work and haven't actually scribbled down what I've been saying. Check them out. All the socials for me, for my guest, and all the stuff I've been rabbiting on about are on there. Thank you as always for your support, and until the next time.